Welcome to the sermon podcast of South Hills Church in Costa Mesa. My name is Chris Kretzu, and I'm the campus pastor here. Thank you for carving out the time to listen to this today. I hope that you will be encouraged and challenged, and ultimately that you'll have a deeper sense of God's love for you. I'll be back after the message is over, but until then, I hope that you enjoy this episode. We are continuing in this series that we started last week called Rules of Resilience, and we're going to continue talking about the different aspects of what does it mean to become a resilient person, how do we interplay, what is our part, what is God's part, and practically speaking, how do we achieve the dreams and the aspirations that we have that take hard work, and then also how do we face the obstacles and the challenges that kind of just get delivered to us. This last week, I found out that both of my kids have been shipped. You got to be careful when you say that word. Shipped. And I don't know if you know what shipping is. It's a thing now where if there's like a guy and a girl that you think would be good together, you ship them. Okay? So this is, they're in elementary school. And so both of my kids have been shipped. One of them's almost 12, so it kind of makes a little bit of sense, and he's not sure how he feels about it. And then the other one just turned 8, and so we were a little bit surprised, and we're like, Arlo, who shipped you? And this other girl, who shipped you guys? He's like, I did. I shipped us. Well, I don't think that's how it works, buddy. And I said, are you going to tell her? And he's like, oh, no. I'm not going to tell her. Okay, well, this is going well. So one of the interesting things for me in this stage of life with my kids is I'm learning all kinds of new vocabulary words that I've never learned before. They're new to me, and I imagine they're probably new to many of you as well. So I thought maybe it would be fun to start off with a little bit of a vocabulary test. Okay, so we're going to put some words on the screen. We'll start off with Riz, the Riz. Does anybody know what Riz means? I see a couple nodding heads. Okay, do you want to shout it out?
Me?
Yeah.
It's like short for charisma.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody's got game. And that's my generation. Yeah. Yeah, Riz means like, oh, yeah, they've got, you know, the charm, the ability. The next word is bussin'. Oh, Jolie's taking pictures. She's going to learn. All right, bussin'. Some people say it twice. Some people don't. Bussin'. Okay, Rick Garvey, let's see. Good. All right. We'll take it. Amazing. Good. Vibe check. Have you ever given a vibe check? That's just asking people if they're having an okay time. You just say vibe check, and then people get to say that. So, yeah. Good times. Okay. Gas. Wes has gas. Okay. Well, no. I mean, that was my generation. You work with kids. Do you know what it is? Okay, Charisse. Yeah. Yeah. Gas me up. Cap.
Okay.
Okay.
Like joke, bro. Like that's cap, bro.
I thought it meant lying. We've got lying. We're saying not true. A false statement. No cap means I'm telling the truth. Cap means that is false. Okay, we're going to move on. A last one. Bruh. Bruh, I mean, okay, it means everything. Bruh has become more of a punctuation mark in my children's vocabulary. It's like, bruh, you'd have no idea, bruh, what happened, bruh. And all of that was said to their mom. So it's just like, who knows? It sounds weird. These words are odd to me. And when they first started saying these things, I was like, hey, you guys got to cut it out. I don't like these words. They don't make any sense. You sound like a goofball. And then I slowly started to realize that these are just the words of their generation. And my generation also has words. I grew up saying things like rad, cool, my bad, dibs. These are things that my generation says, and I still say them, and they still sound normal because the people that I hang out with also say these things. And one day, my child is going to be talking to his child, and he's going to be like, yo, that was bussin'. And he's going to be like a 40-year-old, and that's going to be hilarious. I hope to be there in that day. But what I've realized is that there's this aspect for me, these words that I grew up saying still feel normal because the people that I hang out with also say those words. And the words that my kids are saying, I don't hang out with all their friends, so they're the only ones I know that say these words, and it sounds weird. Okay? I laugh, it's silly, it's goofy, but this applies to every aspect of our lives. The people that we hang out with, they help us understand what's normal. And it could be a good thing, it could be a bad thing, it could be positive, negative, neutral, whether it's families, friends, companies that you work for, the church that you go to. How many churches have you been to that play Shania Twain? Okay, so that's normal here, just so you know. If you're a guest, the people around you shape what is normal for you. And this is a true statement. And so the invitation for us today, what we're going to be talking about is, what are people allowing us to believe is normal? Is that actually what should be normal? Is that what we want to be normal in our lives, in our relationships, in our jobs? What happens when what seems to be normal for you is no longer actually good for you? When the people around you that are living a certain way or acting a certain way, they're in relationships in a certain way, what happens when we start to recognize that this may not be a common trait that I actually want to have? We're all really anxious people. We're all workaholics. Our interactions revolve around shopping or trying to impress each other with what we buy or drive or wear or where we go. We make fun of people based on what they wear, what they look like. We all listen to country music. Like, are these the things that you really want in your life? There's this aspect for us where we have to recognize that there are things that we assume are normal because the people around us also feel like it's normal. And so the question is this what I want to be normal for me? Is this what I want to be something that's part of my everyday life? 1 Corinthians 15 says it this way, do not be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. And I actually really love the way that this is phrased, because the opening line, do not be misled, it leads us to this understanding that some of you think that bad company will not corrupt you, but do not be misled. Bad company corrects good character. We like to think, I'm strong enough. I'm clear on what I want. And you can disagree with me, but we would all say this about our kids. If you have kids, you would be like, you would tell them this. Like, just because you know the right way to act doesn't mean you will act the right way when you're around those people. There's these thoughts that we have, and it's true for us as adults. We like to believe, yeah, all my friends are yahoos and they're all in failing relationships and they're struggling through this, but I'm the one that's got it all together. Do not be misled. We have to be intentional and aware about who we are around, who is in our circle, who's in our life. Jim Rohn famously observed, he said, you're the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. He talked about this specifically from a financial standpoint. Your income is the average of the five people closest to you. It's kind of something that they've just seen to be true. But I think it applies to a lot of areas in our life. Our relationship health is probably the average of the relationship health of the five people in your life. The way that we feel as parents, the way that we're interacting as parents is probably shaped by this. The way that we're showing up in our workplaces is shaped by the people that are closest to you. How are they pursuing their careers? How are they showing up at work? If you have certain attitudes or actions that bother you, you may need to address who is around you. And I'm not saying that we need to actually have a specific conversation with these people, although maybe. But we might need to address just how much access do those people have of me? How much am I relying on them? What is the consistency that these are my people? This is who I'm being shaped by. This is who is telling me what's normal and what's not normal. And right now, you might be going through a Rolodex of who you spend the most time with at work. And you'd be like, I got to change my cubicle space. I got to start hanging out with some different people. I got to make some different decisions, because we have to pay attention. This is such a crucial thing for us to recognize. And the reality for us is that we talk about resilience. We have to recognize that our relationships have a massive impact on the resilience we're able to have. The people around us have a huge impact on this. Last week, we started this series looking at the story of Gideon. Gideon, just a quick recap. This angel of the Lord shows up and he greets him, mighty hero, God has called you to overcome the enemies. And at the moment, Gideon is hiding in a wine press, essentially under the ground so nobody can see him. He's trying to take care of his own. He starts giving all the excuses, but God says, I have a plan for you and I've got a purpose for you. And the reality is that many of us, we have something huge in our lives, an obstacle, a challenge, a dream, a calling, whatever it is. And if we just look at it from afar, it feels so far out of our capabilities. But God is calling Gideon to something specifically, and he gives him very small steps, one small step after another, consistent steps in the same direction. We looked at this quote that said that our life following Christ is really a long obedience in the same direction. And so the first rule of resistance is resistance. We'll edit that out. The first rule of resilience is to take small steps, just small, consistent steps moving towards what we feel like God's called us to do or the dream that we have. But this task, this calling was way bigger than anything that Gideon could tackle on his own. And he wanted to just get as many people as possible to help him, but God has a different plan. And the story's in the book of Judges. It's in the Old Testament, chapter 7. Verse 1 is where we'll start. It says, early in the morning, Gideon and all of his men camped at the spring of Herod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Moreh. The Lord said to Gideon, you have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into their hands, or Israel would boast against me. My own strength has saved me. Essentially, he's saying, if you guys defeat the enemy right now with the troops that you have, you'll assume that you were able to do it out of your own ability, your own strength. So you've got too many people. Now announce to the army, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead. So 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. Two-thirds of the army was like, yeah, I'm afraid. I'm out of here. And they all had good reason to be, because the Midianites had been terrorizing everyone. This was an unwinnable battle in their minds. No one had ever been able to defend themselves or overcome their enemy. They were afraid. And that does not make them bad people. I also would have been afraid. It was a terrifying situation to be in. And it's interesting because in this story, God wants Gideon to rely on him, not on his own strength. And there's a very key piece of this story that has to do with the reality that through God, we are able to overcome massive obstacles and challenges. It's in our weakness that his strength is made perfect. It's when we stumble that he catches us. It's out of his abundance that he's able to give us ever more than we could ever ask or imagine. So there's this aspect of God's capacity and ability that we're supposed to learn from this story. But there's also this aspect of God choosing to use people and work through people. And he wants specific kinds of people. And so what's interesting is how God sorts them. The first thing that he does is he tells everyone who's nervous or afraid to go home. I've read this story probably 1,000 times. And as we were getting ready for this series and this message, it's been, our South Hills kids team, guys, making it happen. There's this reality for us that we need to understand that in this story, God is allowing these people, telling these people to go home if they're scared or afraid. And so if you were to think about it from just a military perspective, from just like an army perspective, would you want 2 out of every 3 people that you're fighting with to be shaking in their boots? No. You want them to be courageous. You want them to be overly confident. You know, you want them to have this ability of, no, we're going to freaking make it happen. We're going for it. We're going to destroy the enemy. And so the very first thing that God does is he says, why don't we just allow all of these people to leave? And then we've got 10,000 left that are confident, strong, willing, capable, believing that they can do this. And it's important for us to recognize that right off the bat, we need some people who are able to accomplish and not scared of big things in their life or in our life. People that are willing to stand with you, looking up at the mountain, looking up at the overwhelming obstacle, and they're not afraid, they're not shaking, they have our back. I want to read a few Proverbs this morning as we go along through this story. And Proverbs 25 says this, putting confidence in an unreliable person in times of trouble is like chewing with a broken tooth or walking on a lame foot. You could put confidence in unreliable people on the day-to-day, but some of us, It's like all we've got around us are unreliable people. And at some point, you're going to hit a time of trouble. At some point, things are going to be challenging, difficult, obstacles, pain, whatever it might be. And for us to assume or to expect certain people to be strong for us will be just as painful as chewing with a broken tooth, which, if anyone's ever done before, is a nightmare, okay? There's this invitation for us to recognize, first of all, we have to look at the attitude that people have around us, and partnering with the wrong people prevents us from being able to achieve resilience in these obstacles. The story goes on. In verse 4, it says, the Lord said to Gideon, there are still too many. So he goes from 32,000 down to 10,000. There's still too many, God says. Take them down to the water, and I will thin them out for you. There, if I say, this one shall go, he shall go. But if I say, this one shall not go, he shall not go. So Gideon took the men down to the water, and there the Lord told him, separate those who lap the water with their tongues as a dog laps from those who kneel down to drink. 300 of them drank from cupped hands, lapping like dogs. All the rest got down on their knees to drink. So the first time God sorts the people, he thins out this army. It's based on their attitudes. The second time, it's based on their actions. It's the way that they approach this stream to drink. Gideon ends up with this unusual plan, and he needs people who are able to think outside of the box, who are able to understand what's happening, who are paying attention and not just acting instinctually, but are actually pursuing this thing with wisdom and intention. Proverbs 13 says, walk with the wise and become wise, associate with fools and get in trouble. Essentially, there is this reality for us. There's this reminder for us of saying, hey, are the people around you able to think intentionally, specifically about what's going on in life? Or are they just reacting instinctually, just kind of like an animalistic approach? If somebody upsets them, they lash back out. If there's a problem, they just run at it without thinking and just trying to, there's no thought process, no intentionality. God separates the people and sorts them according to their attitude. The second time, he sorts them according to their approach. Story goes on. Verse 7, it says, the Lord said to Gideon, with the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the others go home. So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites home, but kept the 300 who took over the provisions and trumpets of the others. Now the camp of Midian lay below him in the valley. Verse 12 says, the Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the other eastern peoples had settled in the valley thick as locusts. Their camels could no more be counted than the sand on the seashore. Okay, 32,000, which was already outnumbered, down to 10,000, which is crazy, down to 300, which is just insanity. And then they're looking at the enemy, and they're as thick as locusts, and just their camels alone outnumbered the sand on the seashore. This isn't counting the individuals. This isn't counting the warriors. This is a massive and overwhelming reality. This is not fair. This is every obstacle. This is every story that has ever had insurmountable odds. And part of the point, again, of this story is that God is the one that helps them defeat Midian. But he chooses to do it through people. And God is the one that is going to help us and give us the strength to overcome the challenges and the obstacles and the problems and the pain in our life. God is the one that's going to fuel us to be able to pursue the dreams and callings and aspirations that we have in our life. God will do that, and he chooses to do it through people. Both of those things are true, and it is so crucial for us to recognize that that's why what we can get through is more about who's with you than what's stacked against you. The obstacles, the pain, the challenges that we face in life, it matters who is around us. Proverbs 13:20 says, walk with the wise and you will become wise. Associate with fools and you get in trouble. There's this aspect of this story that is so crucial for us to recognize who is with us. The big idea I want us to hold on to today, the big thing I want us to take away from is that what we can get through is about who's with you. It's more about who's with you than what is stacked against you. It's more about the people that are around you than the obstacles or the pain or the challenges in our lives. There's a book in the Old Testament called Ecclesiastes, and chapter 4, verse 9, it says this, "Two are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm. But how can one be warm alone? A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken." In other words, if you want to change your life, and if you want to have a sense of resilience with the obstacles that you find yourself facing, or maybe the ones that will someday arrive, or the goals or the passions, the dreams that you have that you want to accomplish, we have to become aware about who is around us. Because the people around us make us feel like this is normal. And so who do we want to put around us? Who do we want to have in our lives? One last Proverbs, it's 18, verse 24. It says, "There are friends who destroy each other, but a real friend sticks closer than a brother." There's people in our lives that we would consider friends who will lead us in a direction, well, it's not going to help us. And at worst, it will destroy us. We've got to become aware of this. Resilience is built in the relationships that we have in our lives. A number of years, it was probably about 10 years ago or so, I heard somebody bring this idea to my mind that I'd not really thought of before. And they talked about our friends, and they talked about this idea that it's great to have a wide variety of friends. And let me be clear, I'm not of the mind that you should cut out anyone who's different than you or believes differently than you or acts differently than you. That's not what I'm saying. But there is a value in recognizing that we are influenced by the closest relationships that we have. And this person said, imagine that you have a board of advisors. Imagine that you've got four seats at a table that you sit at. Who would you want in those seats? And maybe who is in those seats right now? Who needs to be invited to leave the board of advisors in your life? Who would you want to be in those seats around you? Because those are the people that are going to guide us, direct us. Those are going to be the people that help us understand what seems normal and what doesn't. If you don't trust someone to make decisions for you, then you shouldn't trust them to make decisions with you. If you wouldn't trust this person to say, I'm gonna make decisions, they're gonna make decisions for me, and I'm okay with that. I trust them to make decisions for me. They know my values, they know what's important to me, they have the right attitude, the right actions, the right way of thinking about things. I trust them to make decisions for me. Then why would we be making decisions with them if we don't have that kind of trust in who they are? Some friendships are not making us better. And it doesn't mean that we need to cut ties with all of these people, but we have to choose our inner circle by who's making us better. And better for us at South Hills is who are the people that are helping us live and act the way that Jesus lived and did. Gosh, that's two edits, Dion. Okay. Better is the people who are helping us live and act the way that Jesus lived and acted. Better is helping us become more like Christ. Better is helping us pursue these things, because the reality is, I was thinking about this, and I had this idea during first service, and it worked, so we'll try it on second service. But do you know who is ready for the obstacles and the problems of life? Doomsday preppers. And it's easy to kind of chuckle a little bit at the idea. There was shows about it, and there's a lot of jokes about it. But I mean, they have spent time and money and energy and effort being ready for what might come. And can I just tell you what will come? Problems. We will all have problems. The floor will fall out from under us. We will have medical diagnoses. We'll have relationship challenges. We'll have issues as parents. We'll have financial issues. We'll be laid off from jobs that we felt so secure. We will all have problems. How many of us are preparing for those problems? I would say almost none of us. And the most important way that we can prepare is by putting the people in our lives, inviting them to sit at this board of advisors, the people that I want to be like, the people I want to rely on. Have we thought about it? Have we been intentional about it? And so practically speaking, I want to invite you to think, what kind of people do you need in your life in this season? And what kind of people do you need in your life when the floor falls out from underneath you? And then look up and see who's in your life and what changes need to be made. Who do you need to lean towards? Maybe there's a journey that goes on being a part of a church, showing up on a Sunday on a regular basis. This is going to be the first step, I would say, in getting the right people around you. Another step beyond that would be saying, hey, I'm going to join a small group, or I'm going to join a serving team, because all of a sudden now you're with 6 or 10 people that know you a little bit more than the people that are in this room on a Sunday during service. And all of a sudden now you're saying, hey, we're actually moving towards the same things. And you know that because people are choosing to show up to church on a Wednesday night. What a crazy idea. They're carving time out of their very busy schedules to be here on a Sunday morning, to show up to small group, to say, this is a priority for me. You can begin to trust these people. You can begin to rely on them in those challenging areas of our lives. What does it look like to be intentional about this? I saw this online a few weeks ago, and I read it a few times because I was confident I was reading it incorrectly, which wouldn't be out of the question, but I wasn't. You can't change the people around you, but you can change the people around you. I know, it's confusing. We'll go slow. You cannot change people. You cannot choose how they're going to act or react or get better at this or ignore that. You cannot change others, but you can change the people that are around you. You can change the relationships that are closest to you. You can change who you're spending time with, who you're allowing to sit at this table, because what you want is people who are able to help you be resilient in life, in the goals and the dreams and the challenges and the problems. You want people who are on your team. You want people who are with you and looking the same direction as you. That's my prayer for us. And it's not going to happen accidentally. It will take time, just like the doomsday preppers. You probably won't get a reality show out of it. It might take some money. It might take some resources. It might take some just like trying things and realizing this one isn't the right fit and maybe it's a different one. But it is so worth it. And God wants to use people to strengthen us and help us accomplish things that we could never do on our own. Let's pray together. Well, regardless of where you may be at in your faith journey, I believe that everyone has a next step that they can take. If you'd like more information about what it means to put your trust in Jesus, information about getting baptized, or maybe even attending a Discover class to grow more in your faith, you can visit us online at southhills.org/Costa Mesa, and then scroll down to the Next Steps section. If you'd like more information about tithing or supporting South Hills financially, you can visit southhills.org/giving. Thanks again for listening today, and I hope that I get to see you soon.